We're back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN, and just a little after 9:30, and we're learning about some of the names behind the school buildings here in USD 383. Of course, these schools get going here Wednesday. It's a half day on Wednesday, and then Thursday is the first full day of classes here in Manhattan and Ogden schools. And this is just so much fun to learn about the names here because, you know, obviously a lot of people know who Susan B. Anthony is and Dwight Eisenhower and names like that, but you know, not everyone is familiar with Amanda Arnold, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the other names here that are lesser known.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. Maybe we could move on to Lee Elementary School and talk a little bit about the Lee family. So Lee School was built as a 7-classroom facility in 1953, and the school was named for the Lee family, but specifically it was named for Mary Cornelia Lee, who served as Manhattan librarian from 1904 to 1942. So her father, Reverend J.H. Lee, taught languages and English literature at Kansas State Agricultural College before becoming superintendent of Riley County Schools. So he also had that strong connection to schools and education. He was also an Episcopalian minister, spending 11 years as an instructor at St. John's Military School in Salina. And then his wife was Laura Cornelia Canfield Lee, which some of those that might sound familiar, the street names around the area, the Canfield and Cornelia. And so the Lee family's red brick home was located on the land where Lee Elementary School is today. So it was unfortunately demolished just prior to the building of the elementary school. But initially that home was built in 1867, and the bricks were made in a kiln just southwest of the house. But to talk a little bit more, as I mentioned, specifically about Mary Cornelia Lee. So she was born in 1870. And a little bit about her background in the library system. So the Manhattan Literary Institute, founded in 1857, purchased land at Fifth and Points for the construction of a permanent library. After the Manhattan Library Association formed in 1900, the organization raised $5,000 through various efforts toward the project. And so Elizabeth Hoyt Purcell corresponded with Andrew Carnegie. I will always want to say Carnegie, and I know it's Carnegie. Yeah. I pronounce it wrong all the time. Who agreed to contribute $10,000 to the library's construction if the city agreed to maintain a free public library at no less than $1,000 per year. So the Manhattan, Kansas Carnegie Library opened with 1,000 books in December of 1904 with Mary Cornelia Lee hired as its director. She was a professionally trained librarian, and she was paid a salary of $35 a month. So she retired as the library director, as I mentioned, in 1942, after 38 years of dedicated service. That same year, the library's name changed to the Manhattan Public Library, which we know of today. And a few other connections, you know, as I mentioned, at the Riley County Historical Society and Museum, when we tell stories, to be able to have photographs, not just the story themselves, but to have the artifacts, too, that help illustrate these individuals' lives. Another one of probably my favorite artifacts we have in the collection, it's a little floral arrangement card in ribbon. And the ribbon is from a floral arrangement that was sent to Mary Cornelia Lee by President Harry Truman following the death of her brother, J.M. Lee. And the connection there, J. Lee's tent was actually beside President Truman's tent when they fought together during World War I. But we had that on exhibit last year for the election year, just different highlighting different connections with former presidents. But that's one that's just so neat. So here you have a floral arrangement card written to Mary Cornelia Lee from President Harry Truman. So that's kind of a neat piece there, too.
That's pretty cool. And I seem to learn something new here. Did not know she was part of the helping the library get going. So that's pretty neat.
Yes. And wonderful photographs of her working at the library there, which is still standing today there on Points Avenue. The Riley County Court Services occupy that today. But that's where she was for the time that she was working as librarian, which is just incredible. Also found a few other passages in the local paper here. So this is after the Lee Elementary School was constructed. and they had a discussion concerning landscaping at Lee School. They had a special landscaping will be necessary to try to prevent the children from falling over the embankment. It said the landscaping should be striking at least one or two times a year. So they want it to at least look nice a couple times throughout the year, and recommended that they plant a rose that is thorny enough so dogs won't go through it, but beautiful. So it's it's funny what's reported there in the paper. So so that's just a little bit there. I also wanted to mention one more story. You and I were talking earlier. So the Lee home, when it was being dismantled, apparently there were two young boys who kind of went in there and took a look around while it was in the stages of being dismantled. And one gentleman, and this was just a couple years ago, he was one of those young boys who was in there. And he said, brought these letters into the museum. He said, well, while they were dismantling the Lee home, we found these letters behind the wall, and they were Lee letters. So that's just incredible. Here's a piece, and thankfully he held on to them for all those years. We're really grateful that he decided to donate them to the Historical Society and Museum. So another piece, you can read those, and it just adds to that rich history of this family. So I thought that was kind of a fun story. Here are these two boys that they're kind of going through this home and found a treasure trove of letters. And he said that he had the thought to hold on to those all these years. So
that's a pretty neat story there. Well, that's cool. Well, that's I'm pretty excited to learn about that. That's where my wife's going to be working at here this year. So I'll be able to share some stories with her about the Lee family, which I did not know. I thought maybe it was named after a family. I knew there's Lee Street right near there, so... Now I know.
Yes. Well, and that's we'll have to do an exhibit sometime too on the Lee family. Beautiful home. My goodness, there's some really great photographs of that home standing at that location, and of course having the letters. And we do have a few dresses that belong to Mary Cornelia Lee. They're exquisite silk dresses that are just in fabulous condition from the 1890s, 1900s. So we're going to have to do an exhibit on the Lee family and specifically Mary Cornelia Lee. Incredible family.
There's some pretty nice houses around that school too, because I think it was just a few weeks ago it was designated historic district here in the
yes.
town.
Yes. So. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, absolutely. Yep. So that's nice to see. And I mentioned earlier, especially last year with the pandemic, we wanted to try to make Riley County resources as available as much as possible to teachers and students. So we do have, for example, we have a third grade history trunk that's available to check out. It was a partnership with Riley County Extension and the Riley County Historical Museum. It's a really fun, at least we hope it's fun. We've heard some good feedback from students and teachers, but it allows the students to be history detectives. So we provide them facsimiles of letters, documents, photographs, and they get to put together who these individuals were as leaders in the community. So we do have Amanda Arnold as one. Mary Cornelia Lee would be a great one to add, talking about the Lee family, because that gives the students a connection. That's my favorite thing when kids come into the museum, and hopefully we can get them back sometime actually coming to visit. But they'll see an artifact that connects to their school, and they get so excited, or they'll start leading the tour, which is just awesome to see that at a younger generation, that interest in local history, and that they have that connection there that they get excited about. So that's what we've also been working on that too, expanding that program. So I wanted to mention that as well. So any schools, we love being able to come to the school. If they can't come to us, we are happy to go to them.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I see we have the Marlatt family maybe next. Is that right?
Yes, so we can move to the Marlatt school. And as you said, if anybody has any fun memories of going to any of these schools when they were younger, we would love to hear them. But we can go ahead and move on here to the Marlatt school, which was designed in 1959 by Wolfenbarger and Associates and opened the fall of 1961. And Mont Green was the general contractor there for that building. So on March 29th, 1960, the school board voted to call the building Marlatt Elementary School in recognition of the contribution made to the community by Washington Marlatt. So Washington Marlatt, a little bit of background about him. And I will say it wasn't just Washington. His wife, Julia Bailey Marlatt, was quite a force to be reckoned with, too. So she's really neat. And I'll mention her later on here. But a little bit about Washington. He was born in 1829 in Indiana. And in the spring of 1856, he arrived in Leavenworth and made his way to Manhattan on foot from Leavenworth. And in thinking about what it looked like at the time, you don't have nice roads like we have today.
Nope.
So he is footing it here to Manhattan, and he purchased a claim of 160 acres in Manhattan Township. So the Marlott Homestead, though, so in 1856 is when the home that we know today as the Marlott Homestead was built. So if you've ever gone, I always say north because usually we're going from the museum on College Avenue, it's that little stone home that's right there by the soccer field.
Oh, yes.
That is the Marlott Homestead built in 1856, the oldest known stone home in Riley County, which is really neat. And we actually have some interior photographs with Washington and his wife Julia in there. So they lived in this home, as I mentioned, originally constructed in 1856. The man who built it was a Harvard-trained engineer, which is kind of interesting. So the Marlott Homestead became known as Bluemont Farm. And so after retiring, Marlott was very involved with, he was one of the founders of Bluemont Central College. So he was also very passionate about education. And so his assistant was Julia Bailey Marlott, there at the time when Bluemont Central College was built. So they actually fell in love and they were married in Bluemont Central College, which is really neat. But then he got into farming. So the Bluemont Farm, you can read his editorials that he's writing to the paper, his thoughts on farming. And it is kind of amusing. There were people who would write back because of his strong education. They kind of thought he was wasting his time writing about farming. So they would get in these little squabbles in the newspaper back and forth, Washington would, with different other individuals in the community. So that's kind of a fun side note. But Marlott, I wanted to mention, so was very influential in founding of Bluemont Central College with Isaac T. Goodnow. And then, so the Bluemont Central College, when it was dismantled in 1883, the Marlott family actually purchased the stone to build their barn. So the barn that's behind the Marlott home there is the stone from Bluemont Central College, which is just incredible. So even though it's not standing anymore, it's still kind of there in spirit in the form of a barn. So I wanted to mention that, and so that's why we have mentioned Julia Bailey Marlott, too, being involved initially with Bluemont Central College. And the family, too, they have quite an incredible family. Charles Marlott, their son, who was born in 1863, became a world-renowned entomologist. So I'm not sure if you remember recently a book came out called The Food Explorers, about David Fairchild Charles Marlott. I think we may have spoken about that, too.
I do. Yeah, I remember that.
Yes. So he was a world-renowned entomologist and was very influential in, for example, when George Fairchild had the cherry blossom trees or the cherry trees brought in, Charles Marlott was one that said, we need to take a moment because if it has pests in it and we introduce those to the United States, we're going to have a problem. So I did a terrible job telling that story, but it's a lot bigger. They really got in a big scuffle over that. So those cherry trees that we see around Washington, D.C. today, both were involved with that. But really incredible family. And so there we have named the Marlott School for the Marlott family.
I'm curious with the Marlott Homestead, is the school then on the former site of that or—
It's not, but I believe it was closed. And that's a great question. I'd have to look at that. And I bet Cheryl would know right off the top of her head there. Okay. But it is close. So he had quite a bit of farmland, but it's mostly where his farmland was, where we have the soccer fields and the baseball fields today. It was around there and extended to the east. So I'll have to, when I get back to the museum, take a look at that and see if that was part of the property too.
Okay. Again, you're listening to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. We'll take a break. More history in just a moment. Stay tuned.